Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters. I am in New York City on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. And guess what? We have a lot to talk about. A lot going on in the world of MMA. I'm very excited about Saturday's card in Denmark. I learned two very important things about Denmark that I didn't know like 2 days ago. Number one, apparently it was voted the happiest place on earth. And I'm not talking about Disney World or Disneyland. I'm talking about the happiest country on earth. I don't know how they actually gauge these things, but apparently that's Denmark's claim to fame. Also, it's the home of Lego, which I didn't know as well. And so it's interesting. You know, when you're a kid, you play with Legos, like you want to build things. My kids are very into Legos these days. Well, that sort of represents what this main event is all about this Saturday, right? Two guys building on things. You see what I did there? Jack Hermanson has won four in a row, looked very good as of late, coming off that great win over Jacare Souza. And how about Jared Cannonier, who started as a heavyweight in the UFC, then went down to light heavyweight, and now is 2-0 as a middleweight, coming off that win over Anderson Silva, which a lot of people didn't give him credit for, but I do. And so I like that fight very much. I also like the rest of the card. Sneaky good card on paper. Names like Jack Shore making his UFC debut, coming from Cage Warriors. Mark J. Casey against Lando Venata. Macy Chaisson. Brandon Davis. C.R. Bahadurzada. John Phillips. Nicholas Dalby. One of two Danish fighters on this card. Getting another crack in the UFC's battle through depression, alcoholism. The other Danish fighter, Mark O. Madsen. Not to be confused with the former Laker, Mark Madsen, who had that great moment in the parade when he was dancing all funny. He's a 2016 Olympic silver medalist. The fighter, not the basketball player. So that's cool. Gunnar Nelson, Gilbert Burns, Khalil Roundtree, Ovin St. Preux. A lot to like on this card. It happens this Saturday afternoon. Also, big weekend for European MMA. You've got Bellator in Dublin on Friday. You've got Bellator in California on Saturday. That has nothing to do with Europe, but you get the point. It's the second half of the first round of the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix. So there's a lot going on. Daniel Cormier coming back. Yair Stevens running it back. Much to discuss on this episode. Later in the program, we're going to talk to Sean Sheehan, young journalist out of Ireland, works for Severe MMA and SureDog.com, does a great job of covering the scene there. We'll talk to him about that card on Friday, headlined by James Gallagher, and other things going on, perhaps a little Conor talk as well. Mid-portion of the show, we'll talk to another young journalist named Hassan Feizad, who lives in Denmark, who has been covering the Danish MMA scene for quite some time. And this weekend, he's covering it for the Weekend newspaper, a.k.a. Weekend Davison. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's Danish. So he knows the scene very well over there. But first, let us say hello to ESPN's own Mark Raimondi, who is joining us right now from Los Angeles to start off today's program. Mark, how are you?
I'm pretty well, Ariel. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's been a tough day. My dog ate my favorite Montreal Expos hat, so I'm a little bit in mourning, but I'm trying to fight through it and focus on a great time in mixed martial arts. There's a lot of exciting things going on. And by the way, I want to let people know, we're going to start a new thing on this program where you can ask me or any of our guest questions. So if you want to go to the review section of Apple Podcasts or Spotify and type in a question or two, we'll answer them on the show starting next week. So that's another exciting thing happening on the program as well.
How about that?
Yes. Mark, on Monday, I spoke to former UFC heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier, and we were all wondering, would he stay or would he go? Would he keep fighting or would he retire? This is what he had to say when I asked him about his fighting future.
I'm going to fight this guy again, and my intention is to fight him in the right way, and hopefully that's enough to get my hand raised. But I'll go fight him again. You know, win or lose, I'm not fighting again. This will be the only time that I ever step foot in the octagon again.
So the next one is officially the last one?
Next one will be the last one.
And it's against Stipe.
But it has to be Stipe. No one else matters.
And is that offer on the table right now from the UFC? Do they want to make that fight?
Yes, they want to make that fight. They want me to fight Stipe again. Yeah. It was a fantastic fight for all the wrong reasons. Didn't have to be a fantastic fight, but it was. And I'm not saying I can just go grab Stipe Miocic and throw him down at will, you know, but I can do a lot of things better than I did on August 17th.
So that was from Monday's episode of the Helwani Show. A couple of things I want to ask you, Mark. Number one, are you surprised he's coming back?
No, I'm not surprised he's coming back. I know that previously on the show I said that I didn't know if he would, and I wasn't sure, and I thought maybe he wouldn't, but after speaking with you about it on the show, I think I realized that Daniel Cormier is too much of a competitor to go out like that, and he's given it one more shot, and I guess the question now is when is that going to be? It seems like that is the fight the UFC wants, Cormier versus Miocic 3, the trilogy, and the question is when.
Okay, so then let me ask you this. Do you believe him when he says it's just one more? No matter what, win or lose, he's only coming back to fight Stipe and then he's done.
I mean, I do. I do believe him. I believe what he is saying at this moment is true, and it's true to him. But I also have been covering this sport a long time, and I've heard fighters talk about retirement before, and it almost never sticks. Isn't Alexander Gustafsson coming back? Isn't Anthony Rumble Johnson coming back, I believe, next year? So I think that what Daniel Cormier is saying is his truth right now in September 2019. Will it be, you know, the beginning of next year, maybe, when this fight gets made? I don't know. I don't know when that fight is done, I should say.
Yeah, I feel like Daniel Cormier isn't one to sort of lie about these things. Like, I believe him when he says it. I don't suspect that he's going to be the kind of guy to come back when he's 45 or stick around too long. I really believe him when he says, it's one more, I'm down to do it, I've decided that I want to do it, I've talked to my family, I've talked to my coaches, my management. They wanted it to happen December 14th after the Colby Usman fight stalled once again. But as ESPN's Brad Okamoto reported earlier today, Stipe had retina surgery. He's not going to be ready for December 14th. I suspect that they'll do it in early 2020. The one thing I just hope doesn't happen is this idea, and I feel it coming, this idea that, oh, you made us wait 13 months, so now we're going to make you wait. Because let's be honest, the UFC made Stipe wait. They're the ones who dangled the Brock Lesnar carrot. And of course, Daniel was going to take that. And then Daniel had back surgery. And even throughout all of that, they still dangled the Brock carrot. It was only once Brock was off the table in around March that he was like, all right, let's fight Stipe. So this idea that he made Stipe wait, which I see a lot of people saying, is not true. And I just hope the same thing doesn't happen here. Like, they try to turn the tables, tit for tat type of thing.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And I mean, I do agree in a sense, and there were some issues that were out of Cormier's control, but I bet if Stipe Miocic had his way, Daniel Cormier would not have fought Derek Lewis at Madison Square Garden last November, and that he would have stayed fresh and gotten ready for a rematch rather than doing that. So I do sympathize with Miocic and his team, but it's not good for anyone to wait. I mean, no one is getting any younger here. Everyone's got to make money, and I think that I do agree with your assessment. I mean, it makes sense to do it toward the end, toward the beginning of 2020.
Good point about Madison Square Garden. Very good point. Although I'll say, there's no chance DC's taking that fight on 4 weeks' notice against Stipe. The only reason why he took that fight on 4 weeks' notice is because he knew he could beat Derek Lewis and that he wasn't a threat. I could tell, I know Stipe watching is like, this is some kind of nonsense. This is ridiculous. Just fight me. But he was doing the UFC a solid by taking that fight because they had no other main event.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
100%.
Yes, but it is interesting.
But I get Stipe's perspective that, you know, that's really not the fight to do, you know, wait and then, you know, fight me at the end of the year or something like that.
And by the way, speaking of 245, they're still hoping to put a third title fight on that card. They really want to put three. They've got Jermaine Durandamy against Amanda Nunes for the women's bantamweight title. They've got Holloway Volkanovski, which was just announced for the men's featherweight title. And they are close, finally, to booking Colby Covington versus Kamaru Usman. By the time this podcast comes out, it could even be a done deal. They're close, but not quite there just yet. So I suspect those will be the three. And then early 2020, they'll try to do DC. Stipe, you also have the return of Conor McGregor. You've got a lot of exciting things. The winner of Nate versus Masvidal. Perhaps you, like, there's a, I feel like the next few months are going to be very good in the UFC, starting with the Melbourne card. Like the cards that we had earlier this year, the pay-per-view cards, which seemed a little thin, I think we're going to have some really good main events if everything, you know, stays true to form here.
It seems that way. It seems that way. I can't believe that UFC 243 is right around the corner. And really, on the heels of that, UFC 244 is only, what, 4 weeks away, 5 weeks away now? Masvidal versus Diaz. I just booked my flight to New York yesterday. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a really good end of the year for the UFC. They had that card December 14th that they're trying to stack up with the three title fights. I mean, yeah, so far so good. And then early 2020, there is possibly, you know, the return also of John Jones defending the light heavyweight title. There's DC versus Miocic 3 possibly, and McGregor if everything holds up there. So the next 6 months, 6 to 8 months, 6 to 9 months should be really good in the UFC.
You know, it's interesting regarding John Jones. I feel like John Jones and Francis Ngannou are the biggest losers of this Daniel Cormier news story, right? Because had DC won, they were probably going to, you know, they were probably going to do the third fight, or at least try to do the third fight between DC and Jones. And then he loses, and then John starts talking about, oh, hey, I've got something big in the works. It was a fight against Stipe that he wanted. Now both those things are off the table. And if DC beats Stipe, then he vacates the title. And now there's no big fight there. And then, of course, Francis was very close to, you know, potentially fighting for the belt if DC wasn't on the table and if there was no John Jones. So here's the idea that I'm going to throw out. Why doesn't John Jones fight Francis Ngannou? Why doesn't John Jones do what Anderson Silva did when he tested the waters against Forrest Griffin and against James Irvin? There's no one at 205 that's quite ready for John yet. Maybe that changes after the Weidman Dominic Reyes fight on October 18th. Why don't they do John Jones Francis Ngannou as a featured heavyweight fight? What do you think?
I mean, I would love to see that fight. It would be,
could you imagine,
really, really interesting clash of styles. Francis Ngannou is a very, very large man, and it would be the first time that we've seen Jones go up against someone who is significantly bigger than him. I mean, John Jones walks around probably, what, in the 220s, maybe in the 230s, right, the most, and Francis Ngannou is going to be weighing in the 250s or 260s. So it'll be the first time ever that John Jones has a physical disadvantage like that. And the first time that John Jones has fought anyone with the power that Ngannou has. So, I mean, I would be all in for that fight. But Ariel, I still think, and I've said this, I still think that a John Jones versus Brock Lesnar fight could happen.
Oh, Jesus.
I know that I might be crazy, but I don't think that Brock Lesnar is 100% done. I don't think he's ever 100% done. As long as there's money on the table, he's always wanted the John Jones fight. I still think that maybe next summer they can possibly put that together.
All right. Yeah, I know that they would want to put it together. I know it's a big fight. I'm not going to count it out. I just don't think it's in the cards right now. But yeah, I mean, crazier things have happened. Speaking of crazy situations, how about this past Saturday in Mexico City? Yair Rodriguez, Jeremy Stephens, 15-second fight, no contest. Mark, this is what it sounded like after the unfortunate eye pokes.
Estamos y caballeros en 15 segundos del primer asalto. Stevens no puede continuar. Este pelea es no contest. This bout has been ruled no contest at 15 seconds of round number one.
So officially a no contest. Michael Bisping. Yeah. Close by to Yair Rodriguez.
Wow, that was intense when he said that to Michael Bisping. I saw Yair Rodriguez's life flash before his eyes, and it seemed like it brought him back down to earth. Here's my question to you. Is there anything that can be done at this point about these eye pokes? We had Czech Congo a couple weeks ago. We had Todd Duffy. We have this now, the Stipe situation. I know the UFC and Bellator have talked about changing the gloves, trying to curb the eye pokes. I know you've looked into this as well. Is it salvageable, or is this just a byproduct of the sport where you have the fingerless gloves?
It's definitely something that they need to look into. And there was that relatively new rule installed about 2 years ago 3 years ago. It went into effect 2 years ago, where referees are now looking at fighters to make sure that they're not reaching out with the fingers extended toward the opponent. They want fighters to, if they're going to have an open hand, the fingers have to be up in the air. That is pretty much as far as like it's a foul in itself to extend the fingers. And a referee could even take a point away if a fighter is just extending the fingers. That doesn't even have to be an eye poke. If the fighter is extending the fingers, not pointing the fingers up, that is a foul in and of itself now in the unified rules. But we haven't seen, we've seen some warnings being given for that, but we haven't really seen a point being taken away. Something like this in 15 seconds, it's almost like, what can you do? There wasn't even a chance for Herb Dean to address that if that was indeed happening. And it wasn't even like a regular eye poke. It was like a swipe down. It was really a freak thing. Also, by the way, but Herb Dean did a tremendous job managing everything at the end of that fight in a very tough situation. People have been hard on him, and we've been hard on him in the past, and but he did a very good job. As far as the gloves, I mean, I think they need to. It would be really nice if regulators can also come together and come up with some kind of a regulation. Because I mean, right now Bellator and the UFC use different gloves. These are not really regular. I mean, they're regulation, but they're not the same type of glove. It would be great if there was a consistent glove that everyone came together and said, "Hey, this is the style of one that we need to use." But honestly, I think that it's hard to eliminate eye pokes altogether. I think that they will always exist as long as the fingers will be exposed in a glove because of grappling. I mean, fingers do need to be exposed to grapple. It's going to be a hard thing to avoid.
Yeah. The one thing I hate about it is, like, I think it's unavoidable. I just hate the idea, like, you're faking. Like, this happens after every one of these. Like, oh, you fake. Yeah. Have any of these people ever had, you know, an eye, you know, poked or scratched or any, like, these things hurt. And they may not look like they hurt when you're watching if it's just, like, a graze. But these things hurt. It's never happened to me. And I know these things hurt because I've been around enough fighters and I could tell they're in a lot of pain. These guys aren't the type of people to cower. A guy like Jeremy Stephens, 6 weeks away from his family, $30,000 training camp. It's just absurd. So it seems like they're trying to book it again. It seems like Boston has been the date and the location, October 18th. They just lost a co-main event. Zabit versus Calvin Kattar was supposed to be the co-main event, and then it gets moved to Moscow. So tough luck for Calvin Kattar. Do you want to see them running back? Does it make the most amount of sense, especially after this incident that gets revealed on YouTube of the, you know, Jeremy talked about it on Monday, but, you know, we now see the footage, some unfortunate language being discussed, to put it mildly, but, you know, that was discussed in the, or at least uttered in the clip itself. Do you feel like that's the fight to make, just run it back at this point because there's a backstory?
I think it has to be. I think it's the only thing that really makes sense. I think it's the only thing that would really satisfy the fans. I feel as atrocious as the conduct was on Saturday, I do feel for the Mexico City fans. There's never any excuse to do what they did. There's never any excuse to throw garbage and beer at Jeremy Stephens. But I do understand that, hey, you know, you paid decent money for these UFC tickets. They're not cheap. And the main event, you know, the fighter that you're looking to cheer on, Yair Rodriguez, couldn't even fight. It was 15 seconds. So I do understand. It's just it was just a mess all around. I mean, there's just nothing. There's really nothing good out of that 15 second no contest. Yeah, I feel for both guys. I mean, I think that you have to do it again. It's just one of those situations where, like, no one comes out looking good. The fans, both fighters. I do sympathize with both fighters in different ways, you know, the UFC. It's just that nothing comes out looking good when a main event fight ends in 15 seconds due to a foul.
Okay, let me put you on the spot here. You're about to go to the Bellator LA Media Day. Can you explain to me in around 60 seconds or so how the draw for the second round of the Grand Prix is going to work?
Absolutely.
Oh.
So the conclusion of all of the first round fights on Saturday night at the Forum in Inglewood, California, there will be all eight quarterfinal participants there present, and they will draw. It'll be like a draft lottery, Ariel, kind of like your NBA, like your true favorite sport.
Yes. Basketball. Whoa. What are you trying to say?
Just saying. I'm just putting it out there.
Throwing shade.
So it's like a draft lottery. So every fighter will will draw a ball or whatever they end up using, and that ball will have a number on it. And the fighter who gets the number one will then take a look at a board that will display all of the open spaces in the Bellator World Featherweight Grand Prix quarterfinal bracket. And it'll have the date, it'll have the location, it'll have, and for the first guy, it'll be empty. So the first guy, whoever it is, let's say I'm the first guy, I want the fight to be X date, at X venue. I don't know what they're going to be yet. And then the fighter who has the second ball will take a look at the bracket, which now has one fighter on it, and the second fighter will decide where he wants to fight, when he wants to fight, and possibly he can go right up against the guy who had the first ball. He can go right and say, "Hey, I want to fight that guy," and then so on and so forth. The number three goes, and I think you get the idea. Hopefully, I explained that in some way that makes
yes.
sense.
Yes. Okay. I'm excited. That's the Saturday. You going to be there?
It's really unique. I mean, I think it's really cool because there'll be some storylines coming out of it. You know, will one fighter be aggressive and go, "Hey, I'm just going to go fight that guy. The entire bracket is open. I'm going to go seek that guy out to fight." That's a story.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. You're going to be there?
I will be there.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. Good to talk to you, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Pleasure was all mine, Ariel.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mark's trying to suck up to TSD after he banned him for a couple of weeks. You know, the no-show, the whale-watching, the birthday thing. So I feel like that was a subtle suck-up to TSD, who runs a very tight ship these days, let me tell you. By the way, speaking of TST, he wants me to tell all of you that we've got a new podcast. If you're a gambling fan, you got to listen to this podcast, okay? I know a lot of you love to gamble on all sorts of things. There's a lot going on in the world of gambling these days. It's all the rage. Everyone loves it. I want to give a quick shout-out to our guy, Doug Kazarian. He gets you caught up to speed every week on the bets you need to place for college and pro football. So if you want some good advice to win some money, find him at the Behind the Bets podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Behind the Bets, great podcast. All things gambling, check it out wherever you get your podcast. All right, so top of the show, I spoke about Denmark. UFC making its debut in Denmark. It's a very good card. It's a sneaky good card on paper. The best journalist out of Denmark is kind enough to join us right now in the midst of a lot of exciting things going on this week over there. His name is Hassan Feizad. Like I said, he is covering the event this weekend for the Weekend newspaper, or I should say Weekend Davison, if I said that correctly. Anyway, let's say Hej now to Hassan Feizad. Hassan, how are you?
I'm very good, brother Ariel. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. Did I say Hej correctly? Is that how you say hello in Danish?
Not even close.
Okay. Perfect. How do you say
it? Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Pretty much just like English, just hi.
Okay. Well, you learned something new. All right. So let's talk about this card. UFC Denmark, the UFC making its first trip to Copenhagen, to Denmark. It's a big deal. I like the card very much. Could you tell us how popular is mixed martial arts in Denmark today?
Sure. And I will get into it in just a minute. But before I get into it, I really just want to thank you for the invite. I just remember 6-7 years ago, Ariel, when I was just a fan of the sport, my dream was to get on the MMA Hour, ask a question, and get your take. And for the roles to be reversed, that you, as Colby Covington would say, the greatest MMA journalist of all time, to actually invite me on his show, is truly an honor. So thank you, Ariel. I truly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. TST, clip that off and send that to the world, whatever Hassan just said. That was great stuff. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome, brother. And, I mean, Denmark, MMA in Denmark is growing. If you compare it to Sweden, it's not as big. But if you look at how popular MMA has become for the last 5 years, it has really grown. Part of it, there are three reasons. The first of it is because the broadcast company, Viaplay, has really gotten fully invested into MMA. The second part of it is Conor McGregor, his rise, his rivalry with Conor, with the Floyd Mayweather, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Nate Diaz, that has brought some mainstream attention to MMA. And the last, and maybe one of the most important reason why MMA has become popular, is because of Mark O. Madsen, the Olympic silver medalist, who's competing on Saturday.
Yes. And so are you disappointed? Are you surprised that there's actually only two Danish fighters competing on this card? Marco Madsen, who we'll get into in just a second, and also Nicholas Dalby. But that's it. There's other guys. In fact, Bellator just signed Soren Bach, who I think would have been a nice fit on this card as well. What do you think? Are you surprised by this?
Yes, I am, actually. I expected at least to have three fighters on this card. I expected to Soren Bach be on this card as well, and Max Bernels, whose only losses are to Michel Prezeres and Arnold Allen, who has done really well in the UFC. And then last but not least, Amir Hadzovic, who's coming back from injury, but he can still take a fight on short notice. But to only have two fighters on this card, and especially to sign Marco Madsen this late, is a mistake, in my opinion, from the UFC. The ticket went on sale with no main event, with no Danish fighters on the card. And they have struggled a little bit selling those tickets, but they're almost close to selling out today. And so they've come after it with the signing of Dalby and Madsen.
How many seats is that as far as the arena?
It's around 12,000 to 30,000 seats.
So oh, okay.
In that range.
That's not
bad.
And
it's almost sold out, but they needed 200 tickets or so. But they've made the last push has been very important from the UFC, especially the signing of those two Danes.
How big of a deal is Marco Madsen's UFC debut? He's competed in MMA for the last few years. 2013, to be exact, was his debut, but he also took a break. He, of course, competed in the 2016 Olympic Games, won the silver medal in Greco-Roman wrestling. He's 8-0 as a professional MMA fighter. Like him fighting in the UFC, him getting signed to the UFC, is this mainstream news over there? Is he that big of a deal?
I mean, his MMA adventure, MMA dream, MMA story is mainstream news.
Wow.
He's in the news almost every single week. So for him to be signed by the UFC is huge. He's by far the biggest MMA star, biggest Danish MMA star in history, by far over Martin Kampmann, Nicholas Darby. It's not even close. And it's because of his accomplishment in wrestling. So he's, as you said, an Olympic silver medalist, a four-time world silver medalist. But he's also very media savvy. His wife quit her job as a teacher to be his communication advisor or PR person and to really get his story out to the mainstream media. And he's very kind with his time, and he also, like, you only need a phone call, then you have Marco Madsen, even though he's a big star here in Denmark.
Wow, so I'm surprised to hear you say a bigger deal than Martin Kampmann, who's won more fights than any Danish fighter, 11, the only other Danish, like all the other Danish fighters that have ever competed in the UFC have only won one. He has had some big fights, main evented, co-main evented, contender. Madsen, who hasn't even fought in the UFC yet, is a bigger deal than Kampmann ever was?
Yeah, exactly. It's not even a competition. Back in the day with Martin Kampmann fought, he had the big fights, just like the title contention. If he won that fight, he would get a title shot. But it was just maybe one newspaper or two that wrote about his fight. But with Marco Madsen, almost everybody knows who he is in Denmark. So he's by far the most popular MMA athlete in Denmark. And if you look at the numbers, in 2018, more articles were written about MMA and the UFC than the whole period from 2000 to 2010. I just wrote about this in an in-depth article in the weekend newspaper. So that just tells you how much the sport is growing in Denmark. And but on the other hand, he's also the most polarizing MMA fighter in Denmark.
Why?
The casual fans love him. They love him for the most part. They admire what he has done in his wrestling career, the way he carries himself. He's very professional, very polite, very respectful. But a lot of hardcore fans and even colleagues, fellow fighters, they think that Marco Madsen has been given a very slow build. He's been giving very easy opponents and a lot of attention they think is not deserved. So they don't dig that. especially after his last fight with Danish boxer Patrick Nielsen, which was the Danish version of Mayweather-McGregor. Patrick Nielsen is a famous Danish boxer who last competed against Arthur Abraham. And Madsen became even more hated after that fight because people saw it as a cash grab. But from his perspective, he made around $200,000 to $300,000 for that fight, and that's 10 times more than his guaranteed purses right now. So if it makes dollars, it makes sense, but not for the hardcore fans.
Wow, this is fascinating insight. I never knew that he fought against a boxer named Patrick Nielsen. I'm looking it up right now, and you're comparing this, like, it was that big of a deal to, you know, like, to compare it to Mayweather-McGregor, that obviously speaks volumes. This was a huge story over there. That, what was it, like the MMA fighter or the boxer going up against the wrestler? Is that how it was built?
It was built as the MMA fighter, Marco Madsen, going against the professional boxer, Patrick Nielsen, who has never had an MMA fight. So it's more like James Toney coming into MMA. But the build-up of the fight was more like Mayweather-McGregor, and they actually charge like pay-per-view money for this, like 500 kronas, which is maybe like $80 or so for the fight. And a lot of casual fans bought into it. They actually thought that it was going to be a competitive fight. And they think they were robbed out of their money, and the hardcore fans, they don't really dig that he's just having their easy fights, and maybe some of his fellow colleagues think that he's getting a lot of attention and making a lot of money. So a lot of people like him, the casual audience, but a lot of hardcores, they're not a big fan of him.
Wow, that is fascinating. And that's the fight that got him into the UFC. That was his last, that of course was his last fight prior to getting signed. That was in June of this past year. How big of a deal is Jack Hermansson there? He's not from Denmark. He's from Norway, fights out of Sweden as well. Like, those are his ties. Is this a big deal to them at all? Or, I mean, I should say he's originally from Sweden fighting out of Norway, but do the people in Denmark care about Jack Hermansson?
With all due respect, no.
Okay.
Not at all. So the intention for this event is the UFC coming to Denmark. Not so much the UFC, but like the MMA's Champions League is coming to Denmark. So a lot of the mainstream press are covering the sport, like what is mixed martial arts, why do people fight in a cage. That's what I write about a lot to the weekend newspaper. And then you have the stories of Marco Madsen and Nicholas Dalby, and that's really the stories for this week. Like the Gunnar Nelsons, the Jack Hermansons, the Sierra Bahardozada, like that's for the hardcore fans. And I really like this main card. I think it's very good for a European card. But I don't think it really sells tickets for the audience here in Denmark.
I spoke to Nicholas Dalby recently. He has come a long way since his initial release from the UFC around 3 years ago, has battled through depression, alcoholism. He's fighting on the card, getting another crack in the UFC after a nice run in Cage Warriors. This is what Nicholas said to me just a few weeks ago about coming back to the UFC and everything that he's had to battle through to get to this moment.
It got pretty bad, like... Especially after the Sabota fight, which was my last UFC fight, I sustained a pretty, like, I had a broken orbital bone, and so it was, I think, the worst injury I've had at that point. So that kind of set me back, and just fell into depression, and you know, didn't do anything else, and stay inside on the couch or in my bed, just binging Netflix and YouTube, like literally all day long. Eating chips and pizzas, and then at the end of the week, well, because I'm a social person, I need to get that social interaction at some point during a week or a day. And then I got, you know, kind of anxious, and then I texted friends to meet up and get some beers, which was like well intended, but with the state of my mind, it just always ended up being like crazy nights out to like 10 a.m. And you know, if you go crazy and drink a lot, you wake up with like blues the days after, and then that amplifies the depression even more. So that was just a vicious cycle I was in.
So, Hassan, as you know, Nicholas Dalby is a tough fighter, a talented fighter. He's been able to turn his career and life around in his last four fights. He's unbeaten, had the crazy no contest against Ross Houston. Cage Warriors, the bloody affair, had to be called off because too much blood on the cage surface. Do you think he would have gotten another chance in the UFC if they weren't coming back to Denmark, or do you think they signed him because they needed some Danish blood on this card?
That's really hard to say. I think it's a combination. I think they would have signed him eventually, especially if he had won a fight or two more, because just after Marco Madsen, the next most popular fighter, MMA fighter in Denmark is Nicolas Dalby. He is what I call the Danish Eddie Alvarez, the underground king. Like, every time I write an article about Marco Madsen, I have, like, comments underneath saying, why don't you write stories about Nicolas Dalby? And that's from the hardcore fans. So I think the UFC would have signed him eventually, because when you look at it, after his problem with alcoholism and depression and with his comeback, and that story was in the mainstream press as well, because Dalby is very media savvy as well, he has actually become more popular than what he was when he was in the UFC. And with Cage Warriors just recently having an event in Denmark and him just really having a good performance, with that all coming together, I think he would have gotten in eventually, but maybe the timing was just perfect for him to come in right now.
So of the fights on this card that maybe we haven't talked about, is there a story? You know, Madsen, of course, Dalby, of course, Jack Hermanson, it's a big fight against Jared Cannonier. A fighter in particular, a story in particular that you're really looking forward to on this one?
I'm really looking forward to seeing what the Khalil Rountree, he's looked very incredible in his recent appearances, seeing if he can build on that momentum, and also see what the Gunnar Nelson really has left, and can he get some wins under his belt and get into maybe into the top 10, top 15, and into title contention? Or was that really his ceiling? So that would be like the big talking points from here, I would say, other than the fights that we have just mentioned. Yeah, that would be it.
And the paper that you're covering this for, The Weekend, what kind of newspaper is this?
It is a newspaper that comes out once a week on Fridays. It is a highbrow intellectual newspaper who goes into depth with analysis of society, politics, or culture. So they actually don't even cover, like, they don't cover MMA, and they rarely cover sports. They maybe have, like, one story or max two stories a week about sports. But this time, the UFC coming to Denmark and this being a big phenomenon, and the MMA market is way bigger than the boxing market in Denmark. I just spoke with one of the editors at Viaplay who has the broadcast rights, and he said it's not even comparable right now. So the fact that the MMA is growing, more and more newspapers and media from the mainstream press are getting into it. With that being said, it's not close to where Sweden is. Like, we are still maybe 5 years after Sweden. But with Conor McGregor, with all the incidents with the Dolly thrown and the melee after the Khabib fight, it really helps. You can see that more and more media actually writes about MMA, and it's because of the good stuff, but it's also because of the bad stuff.
And so I'm just curious, because it's a higher brow intellectual paper, does that mean the story that they want coming out of it, or the stuff that you're doing going into it, does it have to be a little different from a different angle than if you were covering it for an MMA outlet or a sports, you know, paper or something like that?
Yeah, they want to see a trend. Is this sport growing because we see a certain trend in the society? Why is people getting into mixed martial arts? What do they get out of it? So I have talked with professors about this.
Oh, wow.
And Marco Madsen, and there has actually been some studies done here in Denmark of two people actually going to the U.S. and interviewing 37 American MMA fighters and asking them, why do they train MMA? And they say that they have different reasons for it. So it's actually more like an in-depth analysis of it rather than just the actual fight itself.
I love it. That is great stuff. I wish I could understand what you're writing, but I'll take your word for it. phenomenal job, my man. Great debut on the program. Really got me excited even more so than I was going into this conversation about the card, and the stuff on Marco Mattson was really great as well. I really appreciate you doing this. Keep up the great work. Enjoy Saturday. Enjoy the build-up. Enjoy everything that comes with covering a UFC event in your home country for the first time, and we'll talk to you very soon. Thank you for doing this, my friend.
Thank you, brother, and I can't thank you enough. Thank you, and enjoy the event.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on. There he is, Hassan Fayzad, covering UFC Copenhagen for the weekend paper. I won't try to say it in Danish. That goes down this Saturday on ESPN Plus, 11 a.m. prelims, 2 p.m. Eastern, main card, very good card from top to bottom. So it's a big weekend for Euro MMA, because not only is there the Copenhagen card on Saturday, there's an interesting Bellator card in Dublin on Friday. And Bellator has made a really strong push to be the number one brand, if you will, as far as MMA promotions are concerned in Europe. And so I thought it would be fun to call upon an old friend of ours, Sean Sheehan of SevereMMA.com and SureDog.com, here to explain the current state of Bellator in Europe and talk a little European MMA as well. He does a great job over there, and he even has the audacity to call himself the quote-unquote pod god. Yes, that's what he has called himself. Let's talk to Sean Sheehan now, who joins us from Ireland. Sean, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Ariel. I'm glad you got the moniker properly. You know, there's Shawnee podcasts on our own as well. The pod god, I don't mind. I'll take any of them. But, you know, it's great to have these nicknames bestowed upon me over the last few months.
Yes, you have come a long way, my friend. For those who are new to this particular show, can you recount the story how we first met? Because it's one of my favorites.
We first met in person or kind of online and as part of the show?
The online. I don't remember. Did we meet in person? No, first we met online, right?
We did, yeah.
Yes.
I've been watching MMA for years and years and years, and really I didn't have any aspirations to start covering it or anything. I kind of just fell into it. So I was obviously a big fan of your show over at MMAfighting.com, and we had this thing that kind of myself and some of the other fans of the show kind of started up, where we were sending in pictures and stuff, and then New York Rick had a picks competition, and I was part of that, and I was on that show a couple of times as well. So it's a long and fruitful relationship, I think, between us over the last few years.
So it's funny, I totally forgot about the picture thing, but what I thought you were going to say was, weren't you at Trinity College when Connor...
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Oh, no, it was,
yeah.
Dana was there, right? And you were kind of like live tweeting the whole thing, and that's when the whole, you know, movement started to try to get Connor signed, and I retweeted you a couple times. Isn't that how it all started?
No, it started before. You forget me already. You forget. I had been tweeting in your show, and we'd been tweeting back and forth before that.
Okay.
But I think that was the day you followed me on Twitter, and you said, are you trying to take my job? And I was like, yeah, maybe in a few years down the line, maybe, yeah. So, yeah, that was. I remember I went into that thing, and I had 99 followers on Twitter, and I came out, and I had like 500. Like, Jesus, that's the biggest thing ever. What's that happening? My BlackBerry was blown up when I came out. I took like a 4-pixel picture of Dana White with his gold medal and all, and remember, if you remember, he had the Meniere's disease really badly that time, and he fell over and stuff, and he had to be taken out of the arena, and, you know, he tweeted out stuff about Frank Shamrock, and, you know, if he said he could beat up one guy to be Frank Shamrock or something like that, and he broke the news of, I think it was, you'll probably remember better than me now, but I think it was like JDS versus Overeem or something like that, and so I was tweeting out all of that, and there really wasn't anyone else tweeting it out there and stuff, so. Yeah, that was kind of the first time I blew up as someone, a media member, quote unquote.
And look at you now, doing interviews at Media Day earlier today, weighing in as one of the authorities over there in Europe covering the sport. So let me ask you about this Bellator card, because they have tried very much over the last couple of years to try to, you know, solidify themselves as the dominant MMA promotion in Europe. I know that they've tried very much so in Ireland to solidify themselves as that. They've essentially teamed up with SBG Ireland and John Kavanaugh to almost be like what Bob Cook and Javier Mendez were to Strikeforce back in the day, as this sort of like funnel of, you know, stars and up and coming talent and whatnot. How big of a deal is this particular card? Because from what I understand, it has been hit with multiple injuries, and a lot of the bigger names are not on the card this Friday.
It has, but I think it's not the biggest names. You know, if James Gallagher had been knocked off of this card, it would have been a merciful blow, you know, losing the main event. If Richard Kiley versus Michael Page had been knocked off, it would have been absolutely huge. Now, Paul Redmond having an injury and getting off is a big blow. Brian Moore as well. you know, they're two guys that are right in their prime right now at the moment, two of the best guys in Ireland. So that was a big blow as well. Obviously, you know, we lost the main event because Cal Elinor fell out with injury, but we kept getting James Gallagher, which was the main part. But I think there's a lot of excitement there, actually, for it. It was funny today, above at the media day, I was waiting in line to interview Benson Henderson, and the joy on his face as he was talking to someone and kind of saying, there's just energy in this room that I don't really see at events in the US. And I was looking around, I was like, there was, you know, there was a kind of a buzz around, and people, you know, we're mad for it. There's lots of people covering MMA now in Ireland and in the UK as well. And, you know, I was talking to David Green, I did an interview with him as well, you know, talking about this very thing. And, you know, I talked to him afterwards and he said, you know, it's almost sold out. It's very close to selling out. And, you know, I think that kind of says it all. It's a card headlined by James Gallagher. Conor McGregor is nowhere near this card. You know, he will even be at the card. Who knows? You know, this is the new breed of Irish MMA and they're doing really well. And, you know, I wrote an article for Sherdog this week about kind of the takeover and how Irish MMA, Bellator have kind of taken over Irish MMA. Now, Cage Warriors are coming back in a couple of months as well, and they have some very good Irish MMA talent as well. But as you said, with the SBG guys, a lot of the Irish MMA talent is with Bellator. And Bellator have really killed the market. I asked David Green straight out, who's your biggest competitor? And he said there really is no competitor for Bellator because they have so many fighters. Like, if the UFC wanted to come back to Ireland and put on a card, it would be almost impossible because there's almost no Irish MMA fighters for them to fill the card out with. So you're talking about fighters from, you know, across the pond, fighters from other places, maybe young fighters who are maybe 1-0, 2-0 and stuff like that, because Bellator have them all. They have cornered the market here and it's been absolutely huge for them over the last few months.
Is it possible that right now Bellator is more popular in Ireland than the UFC is? Or is that crazy?
Yeah, it depends which way you say it. As you know, as an entity which you go and watch, 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, with your favorite local fighters, you know, no doubt about it. Conor McGregor, at this moment, is the only Irish-born, Irish-trained fighter in the UFC. You know, Joseph Duffy is the other Irish-born fighter, but obviously he's training in Canada. So that, you know, that tells you everything you really need to know. They don't really have an option but Bellator, if you know what I mean, because McGregor isn't really fighting and all that. But, like, it's not just that all the fighters are in Bellator. It's also, you know, the TV deal, that was a thing we talked about for ages and how, you know, that wasn't fixed and that was hurting them. Because everything they were doing by signing all these fighters was putting them on the path to domination over the UFC. And that was the one key that was missing. But now, on Friday night, they're going to be on Virgin Media 2, which is maybe the fifth biggest TV station in Ireland. Literally everyone in Ireland can watch this card for free, the main card. The other part of it is on Sky Sports. There's still a bit of tape delay there. That's obviously going to be a problem. And the rest of it's on the app for free as well. So they have really started the problem. You know, James Gallagher's fight is going to be on for free for every person in Ireland. So that's absolutely huge. If people are watching that and become fans of James Gallagher, Bellator is just going to become more and more popular. Whereas the UFC, with, you know, you always say that, I mean, you always make a good point about, you know, if you go to Argentina, you have to have an Argentinian fighter there. If you go to Brazil, it's always great to have a Brazilian fighter in the top. Same with Ireland, you know, and if you have an Irish fighter doing really well, headlining these cards, Irish people will come out and support them. And, you know, the UFC don't really have that. McGregor's not going to be fighting in Ireland anytime soon. Well, maybe he will if what he's tweeting is to be believed, but, you know, it's unlikely. So Bellator have that. They're giving us that. And they're also giving us fighters like Benson Henderson, a former UFC champion. They're giving us Michael Vincent Page. They're giving us Miles Jury. They're giving us, you know, like Norbert Navigny against Will Flory, one of the best up-and-coming prospects in the world, you know, fighting one of the best Irish up-and-coming prospects as well, and Ryan Scope from across the pond as well. They're giving us lots of stuff here that the UFC just can't. Like, the UFC is not going to bring a fighter, you know, the caliber of Benson Henderson and put him forth from the top on the card. That's just not happening. So, you know, Bellator can do that, and they can give us the best of local talent.
And, you know, it's interesting because I know you cover not just European MMA, Irish MMA. You watch it all. I don't know how you stay up. I don't know what your hours. I mean, it's just absurd. I'm half asleep. It's 1 a.m. my time, and there you are tweeting away and doing whatever it is you do online. It's crazy to me. But I feel like right now Bellator is doing a better job in Europe than they are in the United States. Like, they have this card on Saturday, which is, you know, the second half of their featherweight Grand Prix, and they've got Musashi, Machida. But because of the names that they're signing, because of the talent, the up-and-comers and all that, the relationship with SBG, it seems like, you know, they just had this little face-off earlier today with, you know, Fabian Edwards and signing Soren Bach and Mike Shipman. Like, they're pretty much taking over for Bama. And Cage Warriors isn't quite at their level. They don't have the funds that Bellator and Viacom have. I feel like they're doing a better job of finding the talent, getting the names that people want to see in Europe than they are here in America. And of course, in America, they're battling the UFC. But do you agree with that sentiment? Like, they're more popular and they're doing a better job of building stars and talent in Europe than they are in their actual home of America?
Yeah, 100%. And I think the reason because of that is it's very hard to compete with UFC in America because UFC in America are going to be putting on John Jones on the top of the card. They're going to be putting on probably McGregor on the top of the card, Habib on the top of the card, all these really, really great fighters. But when do you ever see them in Europe? Like, never. We saw Habib in Abu Dhabi a couple of weeks ago, you know, at European time. You know, we saw Bisping a couple of years ago, but there's very, very rare exceptions. So what Bellator did really, really smartly is they cornered the market here because, you know, and this market was always there. You know, we always talked about the UK, Dana White always talked about it, and Ireland was always there. You know, UFC 93 sold out the Tree Arena before any Conor McGregor or anything like that. But then Conor McGregor came, and he didn't, you know, just become the biggest fighter in the world. He became the biggest fighter in Ireland and the UK as well, and created a brand new fan base. You know, he created a brand new fan base all over the world. But he also created here, and, you know, a bigger fan base here, probably per capita, than anywhere else in the world. The UFC really, really didn't, you know, they didn't pounce on that. They didn't really do anything. They came to Ireland a couple of times. They've had one card in Dublin since Conor McGregor versus Diego Brandão. One card. And that, to think about that, that's insane with the rabid fan base and all the fighters coming through. And what has Bellator done? You know, they've put on, what, 3 or 4 in the last year. They've put on cards in London, all over the place. They have to go to Glasgow today. They want to go there as well. They want to sign Scottish fighters. They've signed loads of English fighters. You know, you mentioned Fabian Edwards there. This guy could be the best fighter in the world, I think, in a few years. And he is signed to Bellator now. And I asked him today, I interviewed him. And he says he's happy with Bellator. He's happy to become the best fighter in the world with Bellator. You know, James Gallagher always talks about becoming the best fighter in the world. He thinks he can do that with Bellator as well. It's a changing landscape for these European fighters without a shadow of a doubt. And they're also getting into Bellator earlier in their careers than maybe they would have got to a big show before. So now when you're maybe 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, you might be earning, you know, you could probably tell me how much these guys are getting, but maybe let's say $10,000 for a fight. Whether, you know, where the other way, UFC are not signing you when you're 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. You know, you have to fight 10 more fights maybe to get to the UFC, and maybe you're getting $500 to fight. So they're creating, you know, it's a great market. Like, is it sustainable for Bellator? That you know, that's the thing. It's probably sustainable in Ireland because they can sell out this arena over and over and over. Can they do the same thing in Scotland? Can they do the same thing, you know, in London, in Birmingham, in Liverpool, all over the UK, and maybe, you know, in the Scandinavia now as well, as you mentioned there, signing Storm back today. But Bellator can do that. They can give us Pitbull here. You know, maybe they can give us Michael Chandler. They can give us Vincent Henderson. But the UFC can't give us their top talent. And I think that's the difference why they're able to corner the market here.
Great insight. James Gallagher, who's the featured star on this particular card, even though the whole thing is very confusing, what exactly is the main event? It's tape delay. That's a mess of a situation, and I don't even have the patience to go through it. But he is the star, in my opinion, on this card, a card that also features Benson Henderson going up against one of the newest members of Bellator, Miles Jury, former UFC fighter. And he has drawn comparisons to Conor, same team, similar tattoos, similar demeanor. They're both very confident, brash, young fighters. James, at this point, is still just 22 years young, and when he lost to Ricky Bandejas last year, everyone just poured it on him, dancing on his grave, you know, saying that he was done, overhyped, all that stuff. On the Monday after that fight, I had him in studio on my show, and I just want to play this quick clip for those that don't know who James is, because I was so impressed. That's when I believed that James would become a star in this sport because of the way he dealt with his first pro loss. This is James talking to me in August of last year about losing to Ricky Bandejas via knockout.
Yeah, it was sucks. It's not nice.
Yeah.
It's not nice. Getting beaten in any form isn't nice. It was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. I went into my dressing room and I cried my heart out.
Okay.
I'm not ashamed of it. So no, it's not nice. It's the worst thing it's the worst feeling in the world. I fucking hated every bit of it. But I look back, I watched the fight about 500 times.
Oh really?
Oh yeah,
start to finish?
Start to finish, the whole thing. And I hold my head high. the work that I'd done to get there, how I conducted myself, how I went out, how I fought, how I went about everything. I'm a very proud man. I'm a very proud man. No one will take that away from me. No matter what people say, I'm proud of myself. And I've got stuff to work on. And I'm a man on a mission now. I've got a fire in my belly. And I'm coming for everyone. I'm coming for the whole division.
James was just 20 years old when I spoke to him in that clip, and I was so impressed that he showed up, talked about it, and the way in which he talked about it. So let me ask you, Sean, A, are you high on James Gallagher? Do you think that he could become a legit fighter, a legit star in this sport? And how big of a deal is James Gallagher right now in Ireland?
Well, the fact, you know, that James is selling out arenas in, you know, at the very top, it makes him big. You know, there's no doubt about it. You know, okay, that we've, you know, good fighters the whole way throughout it, but he's the one, you know, Bellator knows well. You know, these promotions know when they, you know, they see the analytics coming through, they see the numbers coming through. You know, they know. So, he is, you know, the top guy for Bellator. As a fighter, like, I think James was improving an awful lot until he got to the Ricky Bendejas fight. And then, obviously, he lost. And, you know, a loss like that is, sometimes it hurts, like, the upward trajectory of not just, you know, your career, but of your improvements as a fighter as well. But talking to James today, and I suppose it's hard to explain, but he's a lot different of a person when you meet him in person. He seems so genuine. When you see James Gallagher on the internet, and I don't know why. Everyone knows. Everyone says he talks like Conor McGregor, which is a bit weird because he doesn't really. If you're from Ireland, they don't really speak alike at all. They're totally different parts of the country and everything. But, you know, it's easy to say that with the tattoos and everything. But when you see him up close, he's a different sort of person. And it's funny, I was interviewing him today, and he mentioned you, actually, because you met him the same weekend I met you at that UFC Dublin event. And he was in Paddy Hoolan's corner that night, and he was in the front row. If anyone ever watches back Conor McGregor, Diego Brandão, the camera pans across the front row, and the first face you see there, big face right in the front row, is James Gallagher, standing there in the front row watching Conor McGregor. And now he's in the same arena, headlining, selling it out. And, you know, I asked him today, like, do you hope guys coming up are watching you sitting in the front row and, you know, will be inspired by you coming up? And he said he was. You know, he said that's something he had thought about before and something he wants to do. So, like, I'm 10 years older than James Gallagher or something like that. And there's, you know, if you're a 20-year-old guy, there's going to be a bit of immaturity there, especially if you're put into the spotlight like this. But James Gallagher, over the last year, since that loss to Ricky Bendejas, he's definitely impressed me an awful lot. I know he's impressed you. I think he's impressed an awful lot of people. And maybe there's a little bit of a turning point there for James Gallagher. You know, he's still going to get the criticisms because he's like McGregor and everything like that. But the more you see of James Gallagher, you know, you kind of get past, you know, the cover of the book, and you see inside, and he's the better. Even a small thing that happened today, the media there was kind of split in two, so it was kind of the SBG fighters and then a lot of the London shoe fighters and stuff. So all the SBG fighters went away and all those MVP and all the other guys came in. So they were changing them around, and James Gallagher was there and I was waiting to interview him. And he refused to go. He said, no, I'm waiting. I'm doing this interview. You know, he sat there and MVP came in and he stood inside him and everything like that. And the new group came in and he was the last one there and he waited to do the interview. It's like, a guy with a good head in his shoulders wouldn't do something like that. You know, he'd just get up and, oh, it's my time, I'm going away. And, you know, he gets it. He understands it. That's why he's in the headlining spot here. That's why he's getting the comparisons to Conor McGregor. Because, you know, there's people out there who might act more like Conor McGregor and James Gallagher, but they're not in the spotlight because they don't get themselves in the spotlight, whether by doing interviews or fighting the way he is. You know, he's 9-1 as well. People forget that. They only maybe look at the Ricky Bendejas fight, but he's 9-1. He's headlining cards, and, he's doing well for himself. And it's hard to fault that, really.
I agree 100%. He's a compelling character. Speaking of compelling characters, let's end on this. Conor's head coach, John Kavanagh, we assume he will remain his head coach, the head man over at SBG Ireland, told the Mac Life earlier this week that they really like this fight against Frankie Edgar. And I've been talking about this last few weeks. Don't sleep on the Frankie fight. He's being honest when they say that they like this fight, that this is of interest, not just because of the respect, but because they view it as a nice little tune-up, if you will, for Khabib. Not that he's a tune-up fight, but that he's the closest that they can get to Khabib. I don't feel like the fan. I understand the psychology, and I'm a fan of tune-up fights, but I feel like the fans will sort of rebel against this fight. This isn't the fight they want for Conor. Are you buying or selling the idea of Conor fighting Frankie Edgar in his return fight?
I'm selling it, but I'm selling it for a totally different reason than what you said. I think Conor McGregor, if Conor McGregor wants to come back in and he wants to make money, he can fight anyone. It doesn't really matter. He's going to make lots of money. You know, he can come straight back in and fight Habib. He can probably do that. He can probably wait. You know, Habib might have something to say about it, but whatever. But if Conor McGregor wants to come back, right, and he wants to be the Conor McGregor that beat Eddie Alvarez, and you take the money out of it, you take the show out of it, you take everything out of it, and you look at fighting and nothing but fighting, I think he needs fights to get back there. You know, he needs, and I don't think Frank Edgar is the right thing. I think something like an Anthony Pettis, a very, very good style matchup for Conor McGregor. Okay, he lost to Nate Diaz, but you can work around that as well. Maybe even something less than Anthony Pettis, something different. I really think, you know, Pettis then Edgar, I think I'd be good with. Pettis, Edgar, H.E., Habib, something like that. Conor McGregor needs a year plan. He needs an 18-month plan. He doesn't need one fight and straight back into Habib or something like that. He doesn't need, come back to fight Frank Edgar because that's a good preparation for Habib, who I'm going to fight in 6 months. I don't think that's enough. Conor McGregor was at his best when he was, I stay ready so I don't have to get ready, Conor McGregor, who would fight anyone at any time, fought 3 or 4 times a year on one leg, you know, couldn't run, injuries. We saw the documentary. That was when he was at his best, when he was going in there head first. I think that's what McGregor needs now. I remember he did an interview. I think it might have been with you, Andre. He talked about his obsession. And he said, I'm obsessed with everything. You know, I'm not about rugby. And, you know, GSP did a similar sort of thing. He said, his obsession, and it almost gets too much for you at times. To get to that very top level, you need that absolute obsession. And Conor McGregor had that for years. Does he still have that? That's my question. And the opponent is necessary, but no opponent will matter unless Conor McGregor has that obsession. If he's got that obsession to get into the gym, you know, and train for 3 or 4 hours a day or whatever it is, and, you know, put the whiskey tours to the side, put the clothes tours to the side, put everything to the side and do nothing but fight, he can get back to being one of the best fighters in the world. He can get back to the guy who beat Eddie Alvarez. But will he do that? That's the thing for me. Like, I think at his best, he could beat Frank Edgar. I think at his best, he beat almost anyone in the world. The Habib fight is still a very, very, very tough fight. Will he ever get back to his best? He can, but will he? I think that's the big question for me.
He is the pride of Limerick. He contributes to SevereMMA.com, SureDog.com. He has a podcast that he does for Severe, the Severe MMA podcast, also on Patreon, right? What's the Patreon? How do people sign up for that?
If you go to severemma.com/Patreon, it costs like €1 a week or $1 a week, around that. So you can send loads of stuff on there. I have 4 or 5 different posts every week, early access to the main podcast, all stuff like that. So it's really basically to kind of keep the lights on for us. You know, we're not backed by anyone. You know, we've no money behind us, really. It's not for me to, you know, to travel up and down to Dublin. I left my house at 7 o'clock this morning. I literally just arrived in at 8 p.m. So I have to, you know, to kind of travel up and down and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what we are. And we're trying to keep Irish MMA going. There really isn't that many people covering Irish MMA. And I feel like, you know, more than just covering Irish MMA, we've kind of a responsibility to cover Irish MMA and do it the best. So that's kind of why we started out up, and, you know, why we continue to try to do it to the best of our ability.
Well, keep up the good work, my man. The great work, I should say. Great to have you on the show. We'll do it again soon. Great insight. And enjoy covering the card this Friday. It's great to see you out there doing the interviews and covering the cards from the arena. I think you do a great job, and hope to see you do it more.
Thank you very much, Ariel. I appreciate it all down through the years. You've always been great to me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. There he is, Sean Sheehan of Severe MMA, SureDog.com, the pride of Limerick, as I like to say. Does a great job if you're interested in the Euro scene, the Irish MMA scene in particular. He is phenomenal and is a great follow on Twitter as well. Sean Sheehan, BA, is his Twitter handle. Before we go, here's a word from TST. TST, tell the people how they can get involved in the MMA Reporters podcast. We're trying to be a little more interactive, if you will. Tell the people, TST.
Yes, Ariel. So as you said earlier in the podcast, we want to answer your questions. We want your feedback. So all you do, if you're on Apple Podcasts, you're on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, but if you're on Apple, like most of you probably are, you just subscribe to the show if you're not already. And if you want to leave us a review, you can leave us some comments. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, and I'll get on Ariel about it because that's what I do. And if you want to ask us a question for Ariel, for one of Ariel's guests on the next show, and if it's a good question, we want to answer it, we'll talk about it. So just leave that in your review, preferably 5 stars if you really like us. And you can do that on Apple and on Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Now, 2 follow-ups. When you talk on air, shouldn't you mute your computer so that, like, the email notification sound doesn't come up.
That would be a smart thing to do, but I only care about making you look good, not myself.
Okay, number two, have the Colts reached out to you about trying to come back? And
oh my gosh,
no,
stop trying to make this happen. It's not going to happen. I don't sound like Andrew Luck. Okay,
how's Screenless Saturday working out?
I had the best Screenless Saturday last Saturday, Ariel. Do you want to hear about it?
I do.
Okay, so this is my thing. I'm trying to hit every brewery in Connecticut. I'm a big craft beer guy.
Okay,
so I went to breakfast with my friends, then I played some tennis with another friend, and then I rode my bike on the Connecticut trail, the bike trail, and I rode to a brewery, probably like 10 miles or so to a brewery, enjoyed my beer, crossed another one off my list. I'm trying to hit like 60. I think I've hit 8, so I've got some more work to do.
Wow.
Then had some fun with friends that night.
What a life.
Saturday.
TST. See, he runs a tight ship here, but come Saturday, he just lets his hair down.
Exactly.
Screenless Saturday. It's a beautiful thing. Well, I will not be doing Screenless Saturday because there's a lot of MMA to watch, and pretty much if I did that, I wouldn't have a job. So no Screenless Saturday for me. Maybe a Screenless Tuesday, but really, it will never happen. Like I said, a lot going on. Big weekend for Euro MMA, Bellator in Dublin on Friday, UFC in Copenhagen on Saturday, then another Bellator card on Saturday night. There's also LFA, and that's an interesting story in its own right. What is going to happen to that promotion with no TV deal? We can talk about that at a later date. Cage Warriors with a card in Liverpool as well. So a lot going on in the world of mixed martial arts. As always, I want to remind you, no Monday show. We're off because of Rosh Hashanah. So Shana Tova, Happy New Year to those who celebrate. But we'll be back on Wednesday for the regular stuff. Ariel the Bad Guy, this show, all that and more. All right. Thank you very much, Mark Ramundi. Thank you very much, Asan Feizad. Thank you very much, Sean Sheehan. Thanks to all of you. We love you. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.